You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of January 10th, 2017, and episode number 297. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. I'm really amazed that I haven't screwed up a year yet and said 2016. Keep waiting for that to happen. But that's what notes are for, I guess. Well, the winds are howling. It's we have like right now about 30 mile an hour sustained winds, gusts reaching about 50 miles an hour. So I'm kind of waiting for the power to go out, but hopefully everything will go off without a hitch tonight. And I can bring you some scary, spooky news tonight. There's a lot of, I don't want to call it depressing, but some thought-provoking information we're going to talk about tonight. That's what we do every week, right? We talk about some interesting things that are in the paranormal news, not just the cool, trendy headline stuff, but we're going to dig deep into some really interesting stories tonight. We're going to talk about that viral-winged, dark angel demon palm tree thingamajiggy that's on the loose out in the west there, and groundbreaking UFO video. I'm sure you've seen this headline. We're going to break down the groundbreaking UFO video. And we're also going to talk some ghost hunting. You know, we haven't talked about ghosts in a while. And we're going to see, are they biased? Well, I can answer that, but we'll wait for that story before I answer that. We'll also talk about the fast radio bursts that's been making a lot of headlines lately. We've talked about it here on the Paranormal News Insider before, so hopefully you are already informed, but now we know where they're coming from, which is an interesting thing. Plus, we'll talk about planning for the worst by preparing for the best. What does that mean? Well, you're going to have to wait. And we'll also have the book of the week, and who knows, some shenanigans, as always, this week, here on the Paranormal News Insider, which is brought to you by Chum Bucket Studios. Chum Bucket Studios offers professional, high-quality digital products from prints to movies, printing, signs, videos, video editing, even website graphics, and much, much more. It all begins with a little imagination. Check them out today at chumbucketstudios.com and say hi to Jay for me. Jay is a great guy. He just designed t-shirts. Well, actually, he's designed a logo for the upcoming PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure, which is the adventure of a lifetime, according to the t-shirt that's just coming out, hopefully pretty soon. I can't wait to get mine. That's May 5th through the 7th in Farmington, Pennsylvania, as I've mentioned pretty much every week here, it seems like. Steve Cole, Stan Gordon, and myself are returning as speakers, and Jay Batochin is also speaking for the first time it's only the second year. Rosemary Ellen Guiley has been booked, and author Ron Murphy, we've talked about a couple of his books here on Dogman, and two books that I've talked about here of his stuff, Dogman and the one about Bigfoot. You can look it up. You can see. Well, anyway, Ron Murphy, great guy, awesome. Very awesome researcher. His books just kind of are excellent. I mean, beyond excellent. For the amount of information that he can pull from his books for his stuff is mind-boggling. On Wild Man, that's what it's called. On Wild Man, just remembered. Awesome books. He's got a whole series of On books. On, it's got mermaids, ghosts, you name it. It's out there. Good stuff. So looking forward to joining him again next, well, I guess it's this year, and listening to him speak. He puts on an awesome presentation, very, very informative. And trapper John Tice from Mountain Monsters will also be at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. And you can get your tickets now. Tickets are on sale. Better hurry. The tickets are separate from the actual campground, which it takes place at Benner's Meadow Run Cabins, which is taking reservations right now for that weekend for the event, which runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday morning. So you only need Friday night, Saturday night. You can stay in a hotel or a motel. I won't make fun of you. I get it. It's going to be cold, probably a little rainy. I understand. Not everybody is wants to be out there in the woods. I enjoy it. I think it's fun. I like to camp. I plan on camping a few times this year. Hopefully when I go kayaking, too, looking for large snakes in the water and things like that. But this event is led by Eric Altman. And speaking of Eric Altman, I will be appearing on his radio show, Beyond the Edge Radio, this Sunday night, January 15th, from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, live. Hopefully I don't lose my voice like I did on my two-hour show that I had at the year end on December 27th. Still kind of recovering from that, I think. It was a lot of information. And speaking of that episode, the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016, which is what I went on and on about for a good hour or so. And we also talked about the top 10 paranormal news stories from 2010 through 2016. Well, the blog I've just updated, paranewsinsider.blogspot.com, or just go to paranewsinsider.com and click on the blog tab at the top, and that'll take you to, well, the blog, and where I've released the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016. You can check all that information out. Speaking of checking information out, again, I just mentioned the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. There's a lot more events in the ghost area, in the cryptid area, as well as the UFO area. And I've done my best to put together an events listing of all of this stuff for you, the listener. I guess in this case, you would become a viewer of the website, and just trying to pass that information on, because these kinds of things are really, really good for networking, meeting new people, learning about this stuff, meeting authors, and getting ideas from other investigators and researchers. Yeah, I know some people don't care for these paranormal events, for this or for that, or political reasons or parapolitics, or you know, some of the people that are there at these events are a little full of themselves sometimes. I know I am. Come on. I'm Dr. Brian Parsons, for crying out loud. But anyway, put together these lists of events. It's pretty good. I've seen a couple that are getting kind of close to what I'm doing, but I still think it's one of the best ones out there. And it's not complete yet for 2017. I'm still working on it. And you can check that out at paranewsinsider.com and check out the events listing and a little link up there at the top. And again, I'm going to be adding some more as we go through. And big thanks to Audrey Hamilton, who does provide our monthly MUFON sighting statistics. She gave me some information about some MUFON events, as well as an event you might want to check out if you're anywhere near the Erie, Pennsylvania area later on this month. It has Nick Redfern involved with this. So check that out. I'm not going to give you any more information. If your interest is piqued, check out that information. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit more next week as well. So that's kind of your little pre-show update kind of thing that I do every week. I know some people kind of like fast forward through that because they're tired of hearing the same stuff. But got to pay the bills and, you know, shout out to people and everything. But it's good stuff. Anyway, we're going to jump into some news. We got some really interesting news, some controversial stuff, and some stuff that is pretty thought-provoking. I know a couple of these stories I spent a lot of time just kind of thinking about, because they're just kind of like the implications go beyond what I'm talking about. Not this first one. This first one is well, I'll just tell you. This is about a viral photograph. It's pretty much the first one of the year here. Uploaded to Facebook, you know, the place to go to get your paranormal information, right? Facebook, it's never wrong. It's always giving you accurate data and accurate information. And yeah, just today, I was just literally like 10 minutes ago before I came on the air, my producer, Cindy, just gave me a story. I didn't even know happened in my own backyard. Well, not literally my backyard, but here in Ohio, we had some pranksters who, they took some zombie parts, some masks and some body parts, and threw them into a pond. And it's a little cold here in Ohio. I mean, not right now. It's in the low 40s with a high wind right now. But we've had some snow, and it's been pretty cold. Well, they took pictures of these body parts through the ice. And no word yet if they're going to get into trouble. But they uploaded this stuff to Facebook, of course. Again, the all-knowing resource of information. And the Ohio Department of Natural Resources apparently got involved. Not smart thinking on these guys' part, but I'll post a link to that later on tonight or maybe tomorrow. I don't know. It's not part of the show. What we're talking about here is a photograph uploaded to Facebook back on January 1st. It's just already kind of fading away. It's not as big as it was, but we got to talk about it anyway. It went viral, and it does get the award for the first paranormal photograph that's gone viral for 2017. It's like, you know, those babies that are born, you know, the first baby of the new year. It's, you know, we'll put the little pin on there on this little story here. And that is, of course, the winged demon, dark angel, the gates of hell opening. Or was it just a pair of palm trees? I know that's kind of anticlimactic, but Richard Christensen posted the picture with a zoomed and cropped area of what appears to be something similar to the Mothman. Yeah, I actually saw that. Somebody said Mothman. I didn't see it. And it was in a photograph taken at night in the Phoenix, Arizona area. The post was shared over 80,000 times. 80,000 times? That's ridiculous. In just 3 days, and accumulated over 9,000 comments. Wonder how many of those included the words Trump or Obama. But anyway, the post has since been deleted, and I don't think this was meant to be a deliberate prank or a photograph of a creature. Personally, I believe that Richard may have seen something, you know, and the way the trees were together, they're creating the image, and he snapped a picture and uploaded it to Facebook. This was simple matrixing, which is you see shapes, and it creates an object which your mind interprets as something else. Generally, it's a face or a figure of a body. That's generally what we see in matrixing type of things. And, you know, when people take pictures of buildings that they think are haunted and they see the shapes of a parts of a window, and they think, oh, my gosh, it's a ghost standing there staring at me. Usually not. It's usually matrixing. And I believe that Richard knew this. But it's many of the other people who saw this and then ran away from it, you know, with it, that sharing it over 80,000 times. That's quite a bit. Now, many pointed out that he should go back and photograph the same area during the day, which that's pretty smart. Others pointed out that this looks eerily similar to palm trees. And of course, there was a lot of people also that were saying that he did this with Photoshop. That's the knee-jerk reaction for a lot of people. The scariest part of this is that many honestly believe this was a photograph of a demon or Mothman. But in this case, I don't think Phoenix has much to worry about. I think he realized that I think he just did it for, I don't know, the entertainment value of his followers. And it just kind of got out of control. I think that's why he probably just deleted it off of his Facebook account. And if you do see this image, which I'll post the link here in a second in the chat room, if you're listening in live, you can join the chat room and get a little behind the scenes information before the week when you have to wait for me to get time to siphon these links out to you. If you look closely at the image that shows the larger area, not the zoomed in area, you can make out two trees that make up the figure. You can see, if you follow it to the ground, you can see it looks like two different stalks coming up from the ground. If you've ever seen palm trees, I know some people don't get out much, and that's okay. I get it. No harm, no foul. If you look to the extreme left of that photograph, which there's a kind of a wide version too, I suggest looking at that. The extreme left, you can make out another palm tree with very similar leaves to it. And yeah, it looks like another, you know, Mothman hanging out over there, I guess. So there's the link. I've shared that in the chat room. And good to see everybody in here tonight. And we're going to jump into UFO news. I've been waiting to talk about this one for a while. last few days as I've gathered some information and some intel on this. This is really, really probably the biggest UFO story we've had in a few months, really. I don't really think it's that big of a deal. I know people are all excited about this particular groundbreaking UFO video. I'm a little let down, to be honest with you. I don't know, because I've had a few people send it to me. I saw it, and to be honest with you, I wasn't really even going to talk about it, but I've noticed that it's kind of gotten a little viral. People are a little excited about it, and there's a lot of people breaking this video down. And I think the interesting part of this, though, was that there was a lot of experts that were involved in looking at this thing. And, you know, it's hard to argue with experts. It's hard to argue with people that do this kind of thing all the time, or that have a background in this, that they do certain things very similar to studying these types of videos or dealing with not UFOs, but anything in the sky as a job, as a living. I really don't. So it's kind of hard for me to argue with them. But some interesting information. We'll talk about it. It's being hailed as a groundbreaking UFO video. That's pretty much the headline anywhere you go. That's all you see. Groundbreaking UFO released by Chile. Comes to us from two Chilean Navy officers who filmed it while in a helicopter. The video has been studied by a number of technicians, military experts, and others who have simply decided they have no idea what's in the video. That's a pretty easy decision to come to, I guess. They do know, however, at least they state that they do know, however, that they know what's not in the video. Now, the video was shot back on November 11, 2014, aboard an Airbus twin-engined helicopter, which was on a routine daytime mission flying north along the coast just west of Santiago, Chile. Now, according to the information provided, the helicopter was flying at about 4,500 feet, cruising at 152 miles per hour, with a cloud base above 10,000 feet, and there was unlimited visibility. There's going to be a quiz later, so you might want to pay attention. I see you playing around over there. Okay, good. Around 1:52 p.m. local time, the technician aboard the aircraft spotted a strange object, which he then focused his new MX-15 forward-looking infrared camera, or FLIR. FLIR is a brand name. The object seemed to be flying about the same speed as the helicopter, this according to the report, and was estimated to be around 35 to 40 miles away from the helicopter. The pilot contacted two radar stations, and neither one of them could locate the object on radar, yet could clearly see the helicopter on their screens, which is interesting. How could you visually see an object? A solid object, you're filming it, you're seeing it, you're observing it, but it's not on the radar. That's interesting. That's spooky. That's scary. That's where everyone's stuck at right here. Well, I got an explanation for that one. The stations also stated that no aircraft was reported or was authorized to fly in that particular airspace. The helicopter could also not locate the object on its own radar, which it should have been able to. You can see it. You should be able to get it on your radar. The pilot attempted to contact the aircraft using a civilian frequency with no response. And what happened next was a 9-minute, 12-second video filming the object as the technician shifted through various camera settings on the FLIR, including a normal HD mode. Kind of makes you dizzy, and it's kind of hard to follow at times. I've sat through that 12-minute or 9-minute, 12-second video, I don't know how many times, watching it over and over again. One interesting piece of the footage centers on a stream of what seems to be exhaust coming from the object filmed while in infrared. This is the second big question. What was the stuff coming out of this object? Now, the darkness of the plume of smoke indicates that it was hot due to it being filmed with an infrared camera. The darker the object, the hotter it is. Right? Right. And interestingly, when filmed in normal video, it's claimed that the plume was purportedly not visible. The helicopter crew immediately turned over the footage to CEFAA. Now they're in Chile, and CEFAA stands for Comité de Estudios de Fenómenos Aéreos Anómalos, which to you and I means the Committee for the Study of Anomalous Aerial Phenomena, simply put. The committee is made up of several people from many nations and backgrounds and proposed a variety of solutions. You know, it's pretty smart to come up with a set of different things that it could possibly be and go through each one, but they struck down every single thing that was brought up. Nothing stuck. And a lot of it was due to the radar data. This object did not appear on radar, so it could not have been an airplane. It couldn't have been this, couldn't have been that. And they used a lot of other information gathered from meteorologists, scientists, and others with special backgrounds. Now, according to the group, it was not a jet. It wasn't space junk. It wasn't a weather balloon. It wasn't a bird. It wasn't an insect. It wasn't a drone. It wasn't a parachute, hang glider. And there's probably another dozen or so potential explanations. They've all been ruled out. Alberto Vergara, the lead analyst from the Air Force Photogrammetric Department, stated, quote, "It can be concluded that the object has all the characteristics to be classified as an unidentified aerial phenomenon," unquote. So it's a UFO, or I should say UAP, and we have no idea what it was. Okay, so it's unidentified flying object, but UAP, that's the cool term, I guess, now. Because UFO, unfortunately, does kind of create that connotation that it's some sort of alien-controlled vehicle. But there's no indication of that. There's no thought process that that's what we're seeing, even though a lot of people are speculating this, that it's some sort of intelligent-driven craft. I don't think that's really where this organization is going to. Now, despite the debate, the UFO culture applauding this video is undoubtedly being the truth presented to the public. The truth is finally here from this video. That's what a lot of people are thinking, that this is classified information. If this were to happen over the United States, it would have never been shown. So this is it. This is it. This is the truth. This is, wow, groundbreaking video. Well, first of all, there's a few things that we should talk about here, a few things that we should consider. I know. Here comes Debbie Downer or Doubting Thomas, whatever you want to call it. But there are some serious considerations that we should look at. First, the main issue is that the pilot and technician gave different descriptions of the object's shape, of the object's speed, and even the specific direction in which it was going. That's weird. They should all be in agreement with this stuff. If you see an object and all people are reporting it, it should all be the same. The estimate that the object was traveling at the same speed as the helicopter should be thrown out. If you can't agree on the shape, on the speed, and the direction, how can you come up with this number of the same speed? Now, if you don't know what the object is, you can't accurately determine the distance from the object, which, again, also screws up the calculation of determining speed. Now, this is the same issue pointed out with the Kenneth Arnold sighting of 1947, which has left the encounter as questionable as well. So if in doubt, throw it out. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. Well, I don't know what that has to do with anything. But anyway, if this object was solid, like they stated, it should have appeared on radar. So why would it not have shown up on radar? If it was showing that it was hot, it was giving off exhaust, it should be a solid object. It should be something tangible. So what could have gone wrong? One thought is it could have been a stealth craft. Well, that was quickly thrown out as the explanation. Some people think that this could have been a spy equipment, some, you know, the United States spying. I don't know what we'd have to be doing in Santiago, Chile. It doesn't make sense, that aspect. So forget stealth craft. The bigger thing here, I think, is if it doesn't show up on radar, but you see it and it's physically showing in the FLIR, maybe it's much larger and or much further away than you have estimated, which I think is the case here. The other main issue with the sighting is that the crew was unfamiliar with the FLIR unit as the technician was testing it out, and he may have been fooled by readings of a reflection or may not have really understood what he was seeing at the time. While the crew stated they did see a solid object, it is possible, strictly my opinion, that this may have been a reflection of an aircraft many miles away, which would have been what I estimate to be the southwest. Or again, the object may have been larger than they suspected and much further away in the direction in which they were seeing it. While the two plumes of some sort of exhaust, we don't really know. I mean, there's a lot of speculation about those plumes. They seem to show heat, obviously, because of the flare. Now, this too can be an effect of reflection from clouds, even from a distance of a shadow. But it's hard to argue with the committee of experts on this. Now, historically, interestingly, this isn't the first time a convincing video like this has shown up, especially in the paranormal news, especially one that's defied all attempts at explaining it. Now, if you remember the Aguadilla, Puerto Rico, the Coast Guard video that was shown, I think that was last year, there was the same kind of debate about this. People are saying, well, this is a government thing. They filmed this. We don't know what this is. This is proof of this or that. And this was Puerto Rico. So this was there were some Americans that got a hold of this footage. And, you know, they said the same thing. This was a UAP or UFO. But in fact, many people believe that that one was a brown pelican. Brown pelican. Now, these teams, believe it or not, that are researching these cases, you know, they have an agenda. They have an agenda just like any other organization. Now we can look again historically. Project Sign, Project Grudge, Blue Book. They also had an agenda here in the United States. Now, granted, those organizations were to debunk these or to create reasons why they weren't what they were, even if they were completely illogical. But organizations like CEFAA seem to lean toward the existence of UFOs being in the skies, which is widely believed in the culture of many in the Americas and very strongly in Mexico, as well as South American countries like Chile. Now we're going to get into kind of the explanation of what a lot of people seem to think this is. Now, when I saw this video, I wanted to form my own opinion before I started reading about other people's comments on different stories. So I watched this. I first watched it on my phone at work. That wasn't very helpful. I kind of jotted down some notes and I thought, well, you know, maybe this is this or maybe this is that. And I waited until I got home and pulled up the story, pulled up the video on YouTube, and I watched it. And I watched it three or four times and I jotted down some notes. And I was kind of shaking my head at this. Like, I don't understand why they don't think this is what some people have said, you know, what's suggested in this story. So then I started reading what other people had done and started doing more research on the story. And lo and behold, very similar explanation came up, which I'll mention here in a second. But first, I want to remind you that you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, be sure to tune in tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, as Frankly and his co-host, Donald Davis, talk to – who are they talking to? Well, they're talking to the husband and wife dynamic duo of the paranormal, paranormal investigators, hosts of Sit, Chat, and Laugh with the Lynches on Z-Talk Radio and founders of Hindsight Paranormal, Jay and Teresa Lynch, tonight on Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host, Frankly, and co-host Donald Davis, right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting at WCJVradio.com. Again, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific. And if you're in Hawaii, well, heck, if you're in Alaska, that's 5 p.m. And Hawaii, that's 4. We have people in Hawaii? Give me a shout out. I don't know. Maybe we do. I don't know. I'm sure there is. It's got to be. So let's go back to the UFO here. I think I remember where I left off here. Well, the UFOs. This particular video, groundbreaking video, that is really getting some people in the UFO field kind of excited. I don't really think too much of this, to be honest with you. And I'll tell you why here. Mick West of Metabunk.org states that he feels the image is, in fact, an airplane. Wait a minute. The experts have all agreed it's not an airplane. Radar data shows no planes in the area. No one was there. How did he come up with this explanation? This is pretty much exactly what I thought, too. I was like, that looks like an airplane at an angle. That's exhaust. That's contrail. That's the plane banking and moving. That's exactly what I thought. And to read his little thing here, I was a little excited about it. But I wondered, what would he bring to the table? Would he have any kind of evidence? Would he have any kind of validation to back up his claim? I have nothing. Just my word, just my thought on what I'm observing. Now, he feels that the airplane is potentially flight LA-330, which was much higher and much further away than what the crew had determined this particular object was, which is why the craft was not sighted on radar by the two radar stations or the helicopter in the area in question. Now, the plumes would have been the result of aerodynamic contrails, and the image itself of the object would match that of four engines of the particular airplane, the LA-330, that would be seen at an angle the helicopter was viewing it. So you wouldn't see four distinct heat signatures. You would essentially see kind of one big one that's all crunched together, because the heat at an angle would create that imagery, which is perfect. And when I saw this guy's evidence, I think Mick has done an excellent job of explaining this. West also shows an image that clearly shows the plume is visible in the regular HD footage, which is confusing because a lot of people say that it wasn't there. And these experts missed the simple fact. I mean, they pored over this footage for a long time. Now, when I was watching it, I thought I saw that too, but I was like, well, maybe I'm wrong because they're saying that you can't see it, but it's there. Now, he even shows GPS tracking of the helicopter and of these planes that backs up his statement. The angles, the attitude, the altitude, everything is lines up. So it's not just a matter of opinion. There are some really good facts here. But will the CEFAA respond? Well, probably not. More than likely not. Probably won't hear much about this video unless evidence presents itself that there is an alternative explanation. But it would have to really blow these guys away. And I don't think that they're going to admit that this was an airplane. It would surprise me if they did. I really doubt that they will. Now, if you have an interest in this particular story, I urge you to check out the metabunk.org article. There are some very interesting observations there that I think the CEFAA really overlooked. And I think that they could look at this data. I think they could relook at the information that they have and maybe come to the same conclusion. And sadly, this video might be great evidence of something we cannot explain, but it really does not give any validation toward intelligent life probing the Earth, as it's just an unsolved mystery. Isn't that a TV show? Yeah. Anyway, let me throw the link in the chat room. And this link here, you can go to the entire 9-minute, 12-second video and throw that in the chat room for you guys to devour. And I'll also throw in the link for the metabunk.org article, which shows a lot of great information there as well. And you can chew on that information at will and go over that yourselves if you dare to do so. Now we're going to talk some ghost news. It's been a while since we've had some ghost news on here, right? Well, might not be exactly what you want. There are some ghost stories floating around. There's one about this castle in Denmark, which is kind of a boring story. And there's a couple of really weird ones about being shut down and it's too scary and this. And I don't know. Come on. I'm not going to comment on those. They're just kind of silly. But anyway, this one here is skeptical. And I like skeptical stuff because it keeps us on our toes. We should be on our toes. I mean, not to be ballet dancers or anything like that, but on our toes because we should be looking for ways to improve what we're doing and not just settle for what we're doing, the way we're doing it, especially in the ghost field. If you know me at all, you know that I think there's some really major flaws with the basic methodology of ghost investigation. And Haley Stevens, if you've heard of her, she feels the same way. She's offered up another skeptical take at ghost investigation. And again, many people think that skeptics are the enemy, that they're out to just sabotage everything that the ghost hunters do. But a skeptical view can help us identify things we're doing wrong and help swallow the bitter pill of reality when necessary, which is necessary quite often. It's interesting to read her comments since she comes from the ghost investigation field. And she's kind of become a skeptic because of her experiences working with groups. Now, I've seen plenty of this over the years. A lot of former investigators becoming skepticals. Skepticals? Is that a thing? Yeah, skepticals. It's like, you know, you put on glasses. Those are skepticals. But they become skeptical attackers to other groups and to the field. I don't know why. It's just, I think there's a few reasons why. I think they realize that they wasted a lot of time doing things in a silly way. And when they come to their senses, they're kind of angry about it. Some of them are very angry about it. But Haley, she kind of puts things in a good perspective, and she gets people to think, which is, I think, is the bottom line of any skeptic. If they're going to kind of delve into the ghost field, which they don't believe in ghosts. So if they're going to delve into this field, at least get the other people that do believe in this stuff to kind of think a little more critically, think in a different way. And this whole fad thing it's become a fad, the skeptical attackers. A lot of people that have run groups have just kind of dissented toward being skeptics. And, you know, I've befriended a few skeptics, and I read books on skeptical stuff, and I think it's healthy. It's a healthy thing to do, to be grounded, to be centered in any field whatsoever. I think it's important. Now, Haley dishes out a new blog every few weeks, every now and again, when she feels like it. On her blog, Haley is a Ghost. That's her website name, Haley is a Ghost. And in addition to writing articles for magazines and hosting her own podcast, she writes her little blog of doggies. Now, her latest article, Biased Ghost Research, is Seeing Really Believing. Now, this centers on ghost investigators and some of the bias that occurs with the traditional approach to investigations. While she is based in the UK, most of her observations easily translate to the crowd here in the States. Now, this is a short kind of blog. It's only 7 paragraphs, and it quickly points out the general methodology toward investigating cases and the many issues that this approach has with the misinterpretation of using science to the various types of bias that most fall prey to. I mean, it's not like slandering people or accusations. It's pretty straightforward, I think. I think she's done a good job. Sometimes some of her blogs seem a little personal, like she's lashing out at people. But this one is penned very well. It's direct and to the point, and she points out some very, very solid information. Now, if you read it and you're a ghost investigator, ghost hunter, paranormal investigator, whatever you want to call yourself, you might want to punch your computer or toss your phone into the street while you're reading it. I don't know. Some people get a little upset, but it does serve as an objective view to the field of ghost research and some of the issues that are occurring with the basic pieces of the culture. And let me get that link here, copy. HaleyIsAGhost.co.uk is her home. Yes, she's from the UK. Not her home. I mean, it's her website. Come on. Don't get technical. So that website is now in the chat room. And again, I'll be sharing that throughout the week on social media, which you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, sometimes. Not often. I don't know. It's just difficult to do all that stuff all the time. But anyway, check it out. I'll be sharing that information specifically through Facebook, which is tied into Twitter. So either one, you can follow me, and I don't inundate you with too much stuff. Don't worry. Don't worry. And this story actually leads me to the book of the week. Imagine that. I've got a lot of ghost stuff, a lot of ghost books coming up. That's okay, right? You guys don't mind, right? This week's book is, admittedly, it's written by a friend of mine, colleague as well, John G. Sable Jr. I met John back in, 2009 at the first Ohio Paranormal Convention, which was in Dayton, Ohio. There's only two of them. John and I both spoke at both of them. And John was intense. I mean, he was like banging the table with his fist and screaming and with good intentions. He was really calling out ghost investigators. And I was just like in shock because I've never heard anybody bash our field in public like that. Usually it takes place behind closed doors or people don't want to, you know, didn't want to talk about it, especially back then. So it was refreshing. And I really agreed with the majority of what he was saying. And I really hadn't met him at the time. And I talked to him later on at the conference. And we kind of talked off and on since then. And a few months later, we actually teamed up at a location that my group had been working at for several months. And we conducted a joint ghost excavation at the site. And then the following year, 2010, well, I guess that was the same year, 2010, we did a joint presentation at the second Ohio Paranormal Convention talking about his methodology and our location that we investigated at and how this methodology was much better than the status quo, the basic way of doing things. Now, since then, I've worked with John in Gettysburg, as well as Maryland and in Canada at ghost excavations. And I've spoken at all three of his ghost excavation conferences in 2012, 2013, and the last one being November of last year, 2016. John has a background as an archaeologist, which is very important to his work, cultural anthropologist. He's also an actor and an author. Boy, is he an author. He's published 31 books to date. And his latest book, I don't know if it's his latest. I mean, he writes so many books. He probably has written three since this one. This just came out last year, late last year. But who knows? The way he's the rate he's writing books. His latest book is the Book of the Week tonight. Now, you probably heard. Yes, I did mention that he's an actor. Some people always ask him about that. Well, he has appeared in a couple of movies. You might have heard of these. I don't know. Movie called Conan the Destroyer. I don't know. Maybe you've heard of that. Movie called Dune. Rambo, First Blood, Part 2. Kind of sounds familiar, right? And one of my personal favorites, Remo Williams. Yeah, Remo Williams. Love that movie. Granted, these roles are uncredited. When you work at a university in Mexico and you looking for some extra cash on the side, you know, do little things like that. You appear in movies. But you may have heard of the television show Paranormal State. John appeared in a few episodes of that show as well. But anyway, back to the book. The book of the week this week flows from our previous story on Haley Stevens' look at what is wrong with the current ghost investigation culture. This book is called Ghost Hunt, Exploding the Myths, Exploring the Possibility. Again, that's John G. Sable Jr., or just John G. Sable. Ghost Hunt, Exploding the Myths, Exploring the Possibility. It's the book of the week this week. And John's presentations, like I just mentioned, generally full of excitement, yelling, slamming books, and carrying, you know, just yelling and screaming. And it's good. It's the intention of getting the point across and very passionate, which I appreciate. But he also includes a lot of mind-altering examples and questions. Now, at last year's Ghost Excavation Conference, John read the introduction to this book with it's kind of subdued to me than his usual self, his usual kind of presentation. But the point was well taken. And the intro itself in this book is just awesome. I mean, if you're questioning a lot of the stuff that's going on, you will love just the introduction, let alone the rest of this book. You know, what's going on. It forces you to ponder just what ghost investigators are doing, what the focus is, and just what we're doing to the culture of belief in ghosts. This book does a great job at probing belief and other shortcomings, and then transitions to John's ghost excavation methodology. He really spells it out really nicely in this book. It's a lot of books. He does cover the ghost excavation method on, but this one, it's got some flow charts in it that kind of bring together all the explanations of this. And to briefly explain what the ghost excavation method is, essentially it's using specific cultural activities centered on specific people in specific timeframes to connect to the environment. And it's a, what he calls essentially a, diagonal, or not a diagonal, but he digs down from the surface to through the layers of time to kind of expose the ghost instead of a horizontal view, which is essentially what we do, you know, the current culture of ghost investigators, asking questions, demanding answers, using 21st century technology, those kind of things. It's essentially a horizontal methodology. So I took his ghost excavation method and made it part of my E4 method, which you've probably heard me talk about a few times here on the show. So if you're tired of the status quo, you want to investigate ghosts in a meaningful way instead of pretending to do science, yes, I said it, then this book is a must-have. This book offers a solid alternative to the traditional ghost hunting methodology, which unfortunately really doesn't work as much as people think it does. Yeah, we get a lot of cool stuff, but really and truly, it's not what you think. I mean, it's not. The approach really hasn't changed in long time, dozens of years, if not the last 100 years, despite this new technology. So again, Ghost Hunt, Exploding the Myths, Exploring the Possibility, Ben G. Sable, this week's book of the week. And that's going to take us to other news, some interesting space stuff. You may ask yourself, well, what does space stuff have to do with the paranormal? Well, that's easy. It doesn't, but it could potentially have that. Let me throw in the links to the John's book here in the chat room real quick and give you a look at this cover. I want to say his daughter came up with the cover design, which is it's pretty blank, but it's perfect. If you read this book, you'll understand why it's just basic black text on a basic white book. John usually has some very dynamic books, but this is art imitating his book, I guess. So it's perfect. There's no pictures in the book with the exception of his picture on the back cover, and there's a reason for that as well. So check it out, John Sable. Got a whole ton of his book. Like I said, 31 books. I still got like 3 or 4 more to go. I think I've done one of his books here. So yeah, be prepared for more of John, which is great because he's got some great ideas. So back to space. We were in space. I left you in outer space here a minute ago. What does this have to do with the paranormal? Well, not much right now, but it could change. It could change. These are interesting stories. A lot of people are peddling these on the paranormal news sites, so it's worth talking about. And there is kind of the discussion that this particular story I'm going to talk about here has to do with intelligent life. I don't think so, and scientists don't think so, but what do we know, right? The bloggers, the paranormal bloggers, my goodness, they know everything. And this, I would have to say, maybe science-wise, I don't know about paranormal-wise, but it's pretty much one of the biggest stories of the year so far in 2017. I know it's only the 10th, but hear me out. Now, I've talked about fast radio bursts here on the show a few times, but I've been a little skeptical to state that these bursts are a message from space, essentially through intelligent life. Now, two issues are that these signals, they've not been repeating while a dish was waiting for a signal. And the second is that without repetition, we have no idea where they're coming from. Well, now those both issues have been addressed, as the Carl G. Jansky Very Large Array, based in the plains of San Augustine in the western New Mexico area, was paying attention. A team of scientists led by Shami Chatterjee from Cornell University spent 6 months listening and was able to capture 9 bursts. The Jansky VLA is the most powerful radio telescope to listen for fast radio bursts so far. And with this information, we now know that the signals are coming from a dwarf galaxy about 2.5 billion light years from Earth. Billion with a B. That's pretty far. While this does not help settle the speculation as to what is causing the signal, the narrowing down of the source does mean that some explanations have been eliminated. Some feel that the fast radio burst could be from a neutron star. Now, one specific type of neutron star, which is called a magnetar, which sounds really cool. It sounds like some kind of animal you might catch on a Pokemon game or see in some kind of other type of game. Anyway, Magnetar. That's an extremely powerful magnetic field and is essentially the strongest magnet in the universe. Yeah, stronger than a chick magnet. While this explanation seems to be the strongest explanation, many are hoping that this is an intelligence signal from some species out there in space. But at a distance of 2.5 billion light years, that's not very encouraging. It really doesn't mean much. I mean, that's a long trip through space, even if you're traveling at the speed of light, which would make you very heavy. Better go on a diet if you're going to travel through space at light speed. The other issue is that while these fast radio bursts are extremely strong, having the power of about 500 million suns, which with a burst, so this burst of energy stronger than 500 million suns is happening at a fraction of a fraction of a second. They're impossible to predict, and they seemingly happen everywhere in the sky. Now, this has led scientists to believe hundreds, if not thousands, of fast radio bursts that occur each day. Scientists first felt the fast radio bursts were large events like a supernova, since they seemingly only appeared in one area, one occurrence. But now, a burst has been repeated numerous times in one specific area. It may change the thought of what they are, or it could also create two classifications of fast radio bursts. Now, while a magnetar is the leading hypothesis, it might not explain what is happening in the universe with these fast radio bursts, as the latest one that is repeating. And that's known as FRB 121102. If you're, writing that down at home. But anyway, there's a ton of articles. This has really been everywhere. Washington Post, sciencenews.org, everybody's been covering this story. This is a pretty big deal in science. And again, it's not specifically paranormal, but this could have repercussions depending upon what this is or what is causing this. This may help us understand the universe. This may understand other things about life and physics and how things correlate to each other. So down the road, this may have some very large repercussions that may be bigger than the paranormal too. Who knows? Or maybe it is. Maybe it's some little probes that are out there blowing off some EMF spikes and sending out some signals that we can catch up on. Who knows? This could be anything. Just keep Stephen Hawking away from that, I guess. Now let's talk some killer asteroids. Why not? Why not? That's a great topic. You know, never mind. You probably read and kind of thought about talking about it. I don't have time tonight. The zombie story about cutting down the 7.5 billion human population to just 273 survivors in 100 days. I thought that was a cool story. I don't think it's true, though. I think it's a little outlandish. There is a new threat that's a little bit more frightening. And you know, you may believe in zombies or the potential for them, maybe in a roundabout way, but I don't think so. This story is a little bit more realistic. Now, we've heard a number of times about doomsday asteroids that narrowly miss Earth and that we are overdue for a cataclysmic collision with one that could wipe out a significant amount of the population or can cause some serious issue with as we know it on this giant rock hurtling through space. Back in November, NASA and FEMA conducted a joint simulation of what could potentially happen if a large asteroid were to hit an area of the United States. Many other agencies were present with the simulation that looked at how information would be shared as the object was seen and grew in percentage of a known potential strike area. While the initial release of findings was really slim, there's been a bit of attention on this effort by the government, who recently released a 25-page document that outlines many interesting areas of preparedness for a near-Earth object potential collision. It's coming, folks. It's called the National Near-Earth Object Preparedness Strategy, or NEOS. It's a strategy designed to help us prepare for the eventual impact of a large near-Earth object. And it's got seven strategic goals. The first, enhance NEO detection, tracking and characterization capabilities, essentially more networking between countries and keeping a more organized look at what is out there. 2, developing methods for NEO deflection and disruption. I think Bruce Willis tried that in a movie. Essentially, being able to gather information quickly about the object as well as learn as many ways to deflect before the inevitable and be able to design and implement the technology, not coming up with it on a moment's notice and launching a bunch of nukes with some guys who dig for oil. Anyway, 3, improve modeling predictions and information integration. Well, this is essentially being able to determine where the near-Earth objects will strike, organizing those who have the information. 4, develop emergency procedures for NEO impact scenarios. Now, the key words and phrases in this paragraph are mitigate, respond to, and recover from an impact. This also includes being prepared for such a scenario. 5, establish NEO impact response and recovery procedures. I think that's pretty basic here. Creating national and international protocols for responding and being able to quickly recover from an impact. 6, leverage and support international cooperation. Good luck on that one. This is the paragraph I was kind of looking forward to. I don't think it's going to happen. This one recognizes that this won't either be a national issue or somebody else's issue. It's going to be a near-Earth object strike of a large asteroid will be a global problem, and it will be a global challenge to prepare and react to a large strike no matter where the physical impact is. 7, establish coordination and communications protocols and thresholds for taking action. This boils down to who gets the information first and who gets to hear it next. This one I'm a little concerned about. And it also looks at how to react under various circumstances. Now, the idea of a potential threat has made the National Science and Technology Council, NSTC, create an interagency working group, IWG, for the outline, which is known as Detecting and Mitigating the Impact of Earthbound Near-Earth Objects, known as DAMIEN. DAMIEN, are you serious? Detecting and Mitigating the Impact of Earthbound Near-Earth Objects, DAMIEN. Wow, couldn't they have found another interesting acronym for describing something that might try to kill us all? Well, the government will soon release the National Near-Earth Object Preparedness Action Plan that will implement the strategy of the near-Earth, or the National Near-Earth Object Preparedness Strategy. And it's an interesting read. Again, it's 25 pages. It's put together in a very simple and easy-to-read way. It just makes you wonder if they know something that we don't. It's a little scary. Why did they all of a sudden put this together? But makes you a little nervous. In the back of my mind, I was thinking, I got a little nervous. Maybe they know something that there's an impact coming and they just don't want to tell us yet. You know, maybe that's part of this whole plan here. Now, there has been a rise in large near-Earth objects as well as smaller strikes that have gotten the world's attention. I mean, you don't have to go far back to look at the Chelyabinsk, Russia asteroid that was estimated to be 20 meters, 65 feet across. Now, that broke up on February 15, 2013 at roughly 97,000 feet. The atmospheric energy created by the asteroid was 29 times the energy released from the atomic bomb detonated at Hiroshima. Well, that's according to Wikipedia. The sonic booms created by the meteor broke windows in over 7,200 buildings and even collapsed a roof and wall at a zinc plant, all of which resulted in 1,500 plus people injured. That was a small one, folks. Now, this object is thought to be the largest object to hit Earth since the Tunguska event in 1908. Again, do they know something that we don't? I mean, my biggest fear about this, we've never experienced anything like this before. We've had hurricanes, earthquakes, tsunamis, recently, all of this within the last 10, 15 years, but never a large or even medium-sized impact. I mean, other than our knowledge of the Tunguska event and this Russian event in 2013, how will people react if this happens or when this happens? I mean, think about this, how people reacted to the Mayan calendar, the Y2K threat. I mean, can you imagine how people would react if a large rock landed on any city of any size here in the United States? Just think of that pure panic. And for that, I'm going to leave you with that thought. Just think about that. I mean, I'm glad that the government did this. I think this is long overdue, and I think it's going to lead to good things, because if you can be prepared as a nation and a leader in international negotiations and in this type of thing, I think this is very productive if and when, I should say when, not if, it's going to happen eventually. Just because it hasn't happened in hundreds of years or even the last couple of thousand years doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. We'd be kidding ourselves if we don't think it's not going to happen. This is good news, I think, and we'll see how this pans out. Again, it might not be paranormal, but any strange Earth story like this is generally covered by the paranormal. So again, sleep well tonight thinking about that story. Big thanks to Cindy, my producer, to Dita in the chat room, everyone else for tuning in the chat room as well. Always you guys. Looks like we're missing somebody in there. But anyway, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.